You are listening to BensTorah.com.
We are going to answer the following questions. Why are Prozac and Viagra the most popular drugs in America? How can you tell in 15 minutes if a couple will get a divorce within 7 years? Why are some doctors sued and others are not? Does therapy help? And what is the correlation between abortion and crime? Now, to start off this lecture and to get us in the proper mood, I'd like to read to you an editorial from a very important journal. It's called Modern Counseling. You may find this editorial shocking, but it's something we have to consider. The title of the editorial is, "The Marriage Counseling Scam is a Real Moneymaker." Okay, and I'll read it to you. "There is a sucker born every minute. And as a National Board for Certified Counselors, licensed marriage counselor, I know that better than anyone. For 22 years, I've built troubled couples out of their hard-earned cash by actually convincing them that their marital problems have a solution, and then I could give it to them. Yes, this marriage counseling scam is a real moneymaker. I hate to give away my secrets, but I'll let you in on the basics, just so that you could see what an amazing racket I have going. It's so simple, anyone could pull it off. First, you've got to find a school that offers a master's degree in counseling. They have them all over the country, and most of them will accept just about anybody. For just a little bit of money up front, believe me, you'll recoup your investment hundreds of times over. They'll let you in all the secrets of the big marriage counseling swindle. They'll tell you what to say, show you what books to have lining your office shelves, and teach you time-tested techniques from all the old pros and big rollers in the business. After you get your degree, the next step is to take the National Counselor Examination for license and certification. Once that's done, it's time to start making the money. Get yourself some puppets and big foam bats. Set yourself up in a nice little office with some couches and lacquered diplomas and a receptionist up front just to make everything look legit. Then sit back and watch the cash roll in. I have no idea why this works, but it does. Basically, all you have to do is sit there and listen. I'm serious. A good 75% of my job is listening as some unhappy husband and wife team drones on about their problems. Every once in a while, you say something like, "Well, what are some things Don could do to make you feel like he appreciates you?" Or, "Don, did you even know Wendy felt like this way?" The rest of the time, it's just keep the eyes open, nod, and cash the checks. Check this out. These couples pay me $200 an hour, and I get paid whether I solve their problems or not. If they leave crying their eyes out, I get paid. If they end up getting a divorce, I get paid. I actually stay in one place and make repeat customers out of them. Some of them I've had coming in on a weekly basis for years. This month alone, it's $200, $200, $200. Thank you, Mr. and Mrs. Abramson. I know that some of you are thinking, how can you prey on these innocent people? It says, hey, I didn't ask them to be born foolish. That's their own fault. Or as I find out with a lot of them, it's their parents' fault. When in doubt, trace it back to the parents. Take this one couple I had here today, the Ortons. The husband says he feels smothered. The wife, meanwhile, says she's not self-actualized in the marriage, whatever that means. So I let them jabber on for a good 20 minutes. Finally, I ask, well, how much time do you spend together? Turns out they both work out of their home, and not only do they have no mental or physical boundaries to separate work time from social time, but they also have almost no autonomous recreational interests. So what do? I tell them to take out a piece of paper and draw up a schedule that includes together time and independent time. Do you know how much thought I put into that genius advice? Zero. For that, I got $200. The best part is, as they were leaving, I said, come back next week, and we'll see how the schedule is working. They actually thanked me as they walked out. As a break from counseling, I've been working on a book called Family Foundations, Building the Base That Will Sustain Your Marriage for a Lifetime. When it hits the bookstores, I'll be pulling in money from all across the country. Well, now, I'm sure you're shaking your head in disgust, but this proves a valuable, important experiment that was recently done by researchers in the Demancio brand advertising. They studied friends of neighbors of 200 volunteers, and what they've learned, that Americans will believe anything as long as it comes from a friend or a neighbor. The ad recruited two people to tell fibs to their friends, then polled the friends a week later. Sample results, 27% repeated the lie that "just do it" was the slogan of Ex-Lax and not Nike. 22% believed that milk was the other white meat. 23% thought Amazon.com was a fashion website for large women. And 29% agreed that Kenneth Starr was the president of Starbucks. Now, if this is what happens when your friends and neighbors say ludicrous things to you, how much more so when you hear these things on the media, television, magazines, all the so-called reliable, responsible people that are giving you the facts with which to shape your life. When we hear from authority figures, we are ready to accept whatever they say. We stop thinking for ourselves and we rely on other people. And obviously you, as a rabbi, and you know me, and when I told you this came from Modern Counseling, this article, you believed me somewhat. Well, I'm sorry, it didn't come from Modern Counseling. It came from The Onion, a satirical newspaper. So you could rest, such articles do not get into the fancy, glossy counseling magazines. The goal of today's lecture is to open up our eyes and for us to start analyzing our own life and start thinking about who we are, where we are going in life, and not walking around in life in a stupor and being told by others what to think and what to do. We have to start taking control of our own lives and not be pressured by outside forces to tell us how to think, how to dress, what makes us happy, what makes us successful, how we should raise our children, and what should be our goals in life. So we are going to go through very important concepts that affect us on a daily basis. The question is, why in the world, in today's modern society, which we have so much, even Henry VIII, we've all heard of King Henry VIII of England. He was a very fabulously wealthy man. He had a whole bunch of wives. He lived in a castle. He had everything, but he also had gout. And he didn't have a toilet bowl. And it was cold in his castle. And the food wasn't as good as McDonald's. And here you had a king who supposedly had everything, but compared to somebody even on welfare, they are 1,000 times better in their lifestyle than Henry VIII. I remember when I was living in Israel for a long time, and in Israel, they don't really have big supermarkets over there because nobody has a car. And for you to go, lately they started getting some more, but when I was living, they didn't have it. To go in a bus and to schlep all your groceries back home, it didn't pay. So they had these little things called makolets, little places that had the bread and your basic necessities. And when I got used to it after a while living there, when I came back to LA to see my parents, and I walked into Ralph's supermarket, I was like blown back. I said, wow, the Messiah is here. This is a messianic age. Look at all this food. Everything you want, and at a price you can afford. And everybody's walking around like nothing's going on. I just couldn't understand it. Oh, do you see the Messiah's here? Well, if we're living in a world, especially in America, with such plenty, how come people are so depressed? And if you have so much, you can do whatever you want. How come Bob Dole is giving commercials on Viagra? What have we turned to? The guy who would be president, who would be king, is giving commercials on Viagra? What's going on in this world? We have to understand it. So there's a tremendous difference between our modern times and past times. I believe our parents' times. When they were growing up, they worked 12-hour days, and they worked 6 days a week, and they worked hard to survive. They did not have time to get depressed because they were so busy struggling to exist. Life was a daily challenge of bare existence, and when they got a little extra, wow, everything is unbelievable. Isn't life great? I got an extra piece of meat for the cholent. This is going to be the best Shabbos ever. That's the way it was. They didn't have time. But thank God today, we have our material needs met. And what happens? We have free time. And we have extra money. And what do you do with free time and extra money? Get into trouble. Every time the government decrees a national holiday, they are signing the death warrant of 400 people. Because it's a holiday, they don't work, they get drunk, they get into a car accident, they're dead. It will be much better for those 400 people if they stayed at work. If we go into any one of our homes and we pulled out onto the street every single item we have in our home and we put it in an order in rows on shelves, we would think we'd be going into a mini Kmart. We have so much stuff. In fact, it was a fascinating story about this man who came to the rabbi, and he said to the rabbi, "Rabbi, it's so rough in my house. We don't have enough to eat. We don't have enough room. What should I do?" So the rabbi said, "You have chickens?" He said, "You have chickens. Bring the chickens into the house." So he brought the chickens in the house. He goes to them the next week. He says, "Rabbi, I have chickens in my house for my kids. What am I to do?" He said, "Bring the goats in the house." The guy brings the goats in the house. He says, "Rabbi, it's going crazy. You have to help me." He said, "I have one more thing for you to do. You have a cow? Bring the cow in the house." So he brings the cow, and the goat's there, the cows, the chickens, the kids. He says, "Rabbi, I can't take it anymore. I'm going crazy." He says, "You know what? Take out the goats, the chicken, and the cow, and come back to me." Comes back to me the next day. He says, "Rabbi, you won't believe how pleasurable my house is. It is such a blessing, my house." What happens? When we have everything, we tend to have nothing. And that's the problem. The problem is there used to be structure, but now we have free time and we have affluence. And what do we need to do with the money? I'm making money. I have to buy things with it. Well, I can't just buy things. I have to buy more things. Charles Dickens says, "Do you know what happiness is? Making $10 a month." Back then it was whatever they had, pounds a month. It was a lot of money back then, and spending 9.5 pounds. Do you know what misery is? Making 10 pounds a month and spending 10.5 pounds a month. That's misery. What's the difference? The difference is spending more than what you have. And why? because I have to keep up with the Joneses. I have to keep up to society. I cannot be happy until I fulfill the whim and will of Oprah and everyone else out there who tells me how I should live my life. And if I mess up my life enough, no problem. I can go on Jerry Springer and show what a doofus I am in front of everybody, and I will still be famous. Now, once you have freedom, it used to be in the good old days, there was a certain level of morality. Morality is important. But what happens in the 60s, freedom, they wanted freedom, which was a good idea on some level. But total freedom, it's like being totally open-minded. Famous rabbi once said, it's good to be open-minded, but don't be so open-minded that your brains fall out. It's the same thing with freedom. Freedom is good, but excessive freedom destroys. Because if you could do, by the time you're 25, you have done everything possible, you are going to be bored the rest of your life. And any relationship that you have will never satisfy you. Unless you use Viagra or certain drugs, you will be burnt out. So excessive freedom may seem good at a young age, but it will not last you, will not create happiness in your life as you get older. The focus of today's society is on me. What is best for me? Well, that's the problem. When you go to therapy and you're a me person, does therapy help? Well, the shocking statistic is 90% of therapy does not help. I'm sorry for all those therapists here. You should still go to them. They need to make a living. But 90% of therapy does not help because why? It's like going to a doctor with an internal disease which manifests itself on a sore on the outside on your arm. So you go to the doctor, oh doctor, I have this sore over here. So the doctor says, okay, here's some salve, I'll put a Band-Aid on it and everything will be fine. Well, everything is not fine because you haven't gotten to the root of what the problem is. Yes, people want to go to therapy and they want a quick fix. Doctor, make me happy. I want to be happy. I don't want to be depressed. I want my problem solved on one foot. Okay, so good. I'll put a salve on you, charge you $200, put on this, and then come back tomorrow. But unless you get to the root of the problem, and the root of the problem is me, don't look for outside answers. Don't blame your parents. Don't blame your spouse. Don't blame your kids. Don't blame your boss. The problem is me because the world centers around me. And because the world centers on me, I'm not happy with what's going on. And until someone could shift the focus from me to others, they will not be successful in life. And let's talk about a subject what everybody talks about. Go to Dr. Phil. You'll see it on every other show. And marriage. Marriage is the big topic. Everybody else, all these talking heads refer to it, and all these books are written to it about it. I want to quote two studies on marriage. Very fascinating studies. This one's talking about researchers from Dartmouth and a university in Great Britain. And they studied 100,000 people of different ages and backgrounds. And you know what they found? Fascinating. Amongst the many things they discovered, a lasting marriage brings about the same amount of happiness as an extra $100,000 a year in yearly income. Very interesting. Another fascinating study done at Stony Brook University in New York. They studied women with significant marital problems who had no history of depression in their families. And what they learned was if you're depressed, you might need to do something about your marriage rather than simply taking antidepressants. For decades, people, particularly women, have been treated with antidepressants by well-meaning practitioners. This is very common. You know, you have the Rolling Stones song about being on that little blue pill. I don't know if anybody remembers that one. but everybody used to pop. The suburban mom used to go and pop the pills and everything. They get on medication, and nobody does a thing about the relationship. In this study, they found out they were pretty clearly able to conclude that if they were depressed, the depression was caused by marital problems. They said not only should people seek help for their depression, but they should seek help for their relationship. Now, many books have been written about, very famous books have been written about marriage. Men are from Mars, women are from Venus, why men don't listen and women can't read maps, all sorts of interesting things. All about communication. But it's much deeper than that, because the reality is, I've been giving this lecture for maybe 30 years, and it's hopeless. It's hopeless. Men will never understand women, and women will never understand men. And even if men try to understand women, women do not want to understand men. So it's just not going to work out in that sense. Yet, you could still have a very happy marriage. Why? Because it's good to communicate, but there is an underlying concept that goes beyond communication. There's a professor, John Gottman, who did research on more than 3,000 couples, and he discovered in 15 minutes how you could tell whether the couples would be divorced within 7 years. He takes two couples, he sits them down in a special room, he monitors their temperature, their heart rate. Underneath the chair is a gigolometer, how they move in their seats. And then he has two cameras focusing on each, the husband, one on the husband, one on the wife. And he takes a 15-minute conversation about something that they disagree about in the marriage. Nothing heated, maybe they don't like the dog or something like that. And then what he does after this 15 minutes, he cuts it into 1-second intervals. And then he assigns it a number dependent on the emotions that they are giving off at the time. And he combines it with their temperature, the jiggling, and the all the other information he has. And he puts it into this complex algorithm. And he comes out with a certain number. And he's 90 to 95% accurate. And what's he looking for? What he's doing, he's measuring the number of positive indications to the number of negative indications, the negative emotions. And he has discovered, in order for a marriage to survive and thrive, there has to be a 5-to-1 ratio of positive to negative. Because if a person has positive emotions towards their spouse, that it will override any irritability or anything that happens, even though the other person may be at fault, even though that other person may be annoying. If they have a greater negative to positive emotion than anything the other party says, even if it's neutral, will be termed as a negative feeling, and it will cause judgment, negative judgments. He's looking at 4 main points: defensiveness, stonewalling, criticism, and contempt. Out of those 4 character traits, contempt is the worst. Even though criticism is bad, because that's a universal knocking down of what a person is. But contempt, when you're looking at the other person in a downwards fashion and you're raising yourself above them, that is the worst problem that a couple can have. Women criticize and men stonewall. That's a common factor. But the bottom line is, even though there may be communication problems, if there is mutual respect, then even though communication is very important, but if they respect each other, then the marriage can thrive and can succeed. Men and women won't ever be able to come to the understanding of who each one is. It's a very hard work. It takes a lot of effort, and you really have to be a saint to do it. But even though they may not come to total communication, you can come to terms of happiness if you have respect one for the other. And this is the key. Respecting other human beings is the key why some doctors are sued and some doctors are not. Now, if I asked you, who would you think, which doctors would be sued the most? You would say incompetent doctors, negligent doctors, doctors that made mistakes. And the research shows that it's totally untrue. It's irrelevant whether the doctor made a mistake or whether the doctor is incompetent. The difference between a doctor being sued or not sued is 3.2 minutes. A doctor that spends 15 minutes with a patient versus a doctor that spends 8.2 minutes with a patient, the doctor that spends the extra 3.2 minutes with the patient will not be sued. Because even though they made a mistake, even though they may be less competent than the other doctor. Why? Because the patient feels the doctor respects them. The patient feels the doctor is their friend. And if they feel the doctor cares about them, then they cannot sue someone who goes and cares about them, someone who respects them. There's an amazing study that how simple things can cause one to have respect. There's a concept called priming. Priming is a preparation. So psychologists took a group of college students and they gave them word jumbles. And they asked them to take these word jumbles and make sentences out of them. Some of the sentences, one group had negative connotations in the word jungle, in word jumble. They had aggression, the word rude, the word disturb. That was in their word jumble. Another group of college students had the words appreciation, respect, polite in their word jumble. And after, it was like a 10-minute word process to do. Afterwards, they were asked to go down the hall, to go to the instructor and tell them they completed the assignment. They made sure that the instructor was in the middle of a conversation with someone else. And they wanted to see if the students would interrupt. So it turned out that the students who were primed with the negative words after 5 minutes of the conversation interrupted. But 82% of the other students who were primed with positive words did not interrupt at all for 10 minutes, and it would have probably even gone further, but they wanted to get on with the experiment. What do we see from this? Stephen, this is an amazing thing, that if you just have positive things come into your life, you read positive things, you talk positively, what a dramatic effect it has on our behavior. When we see negative, when we see harmful things, subconsciously, that has a powerful effect on our behavior too and causes us to do harmful things to others. The rabbis have told us that speaking lashon hara, slander, is not only bad to the person you speak about, but it's also bad for the person who speaks it. So we could say it's a sin, God will get angry and all that kind of stuff, but it's much deeper than that. We have another study here. Look, we have so many studies, it's unbelievable. The researchers from Ohio State and Purdue, they have taken surveys. When people go and speak negative of others, like politicians, or they go out there and have negative context. So when a person attributes positive or negative traits to someone else, the listener will frequently attribute those same qualities to the speaker, a process known as spontaneous trait transference. The research is that when you gossip, you become associated with the characteristics you describe, ultimately leading these characteristics to be transferred to you. So what do the rabbis mean that slander hurts you? Because if you call someone else names, you say derogatory things about somebody else, your listeners will take those traits and they will apply them to you. So what we have here is a fascinating concept. Here we have the ability to have a happy life if we choose to start thinking for ourselves. If we go and gear our lives, plan our lives, base our lives on other people's opinions, people that are in an industry that's based on lies and falsehoods, and all they want you to do is consume, consume, consume until you're gluttonous with consumption. They push forward glamour and Hollywood, superficiality of love and good looks, and things which are not real. And how do I know this? Plain and simple. I read the National Enquirer every time. I would think that all these beautiful, gorgeous people, they would have you be reading like a book of happiness, like how to become happy in life, how to be fulfilled in life. That everything I see Brad Pitt with a bloody nose and Angela Jolie with a bloody hand. What's going on here? I saw it. That was last week's Enquirer. I don't bother to read the inside. You can get everything from the first page. You know, between the star and the aliens coming down and from impregnating cattle, you get everything that's going on in the world. But basically, if all these beautiful people were shown to emulate, and they're having the Golden Globe tonight, gold, I don't know what it's a globe, what's so golden about it, but all the in people are there, and everybody's watching the TV and saying, oh, I'd like to be like them, I wish I was like them. Well, they end up on the front pages of the National Enquirer. You know, you can't have it both ways. Either you're like them or you're not like them. If your goal in life is to end up in the National Enquirer, I think your goals in life need to be refined and put in a proper direction. But that's the thing. We've seen that even what we read, even jumbling a sentence can change our attitude. We've seen the influence that speaking negatively about others has on us. We have seen all these things about trying to go for a quick fix in therapy, trying to solve our problems by watching Dr. Phil. Now, Dr. Phil is entertainment, you know, it's just like, I don't think there's any difference between Dr. Phil or Jerry Springer, except Jerry Springer is more fun. All right, it's exciting, there's always action, and always has a plot to it. You know, Dr. Phil, you think he's doing something, but in 15 minutes, these people come with their problems. Oh, yes, thank you, doctor, we're all solved, everything's fine. Yeah. It's all gone, next person coming in. Right? Of course it's not true. The only one whose problem is solved is Dr. Phil's, because his checkbook is getting bigger and bigger as time goes on. That's the only problem that's solved. Because you can't, there are no quick fixes to life when you have the internal problem of me, me, me. So if we started taking control of our lives and started thinking and understanding what's going on around us, and have the courage to say, I will not be a sheep. I will not be a follower. I will become an independent thinker. Then we are starting on the road of success and happiness that each and every one of us has the ability to achieve.
You have been listening to a presentation of BensTorah.com.